Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual from 1977. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find therein, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, we've got a couple of new M monsters, including some Dungeons & Dragons classics that I'm looking forward to talking about. But before we do that, it's time to thank a new patron. This is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like this patron, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my new show, Patron Deities, in which I do for the Deities and Demigods supplement what I'm doing for the Monster Manual in this show, although a little bit more in depth. Our new patron for this episode is Sebastian Wakely. Sebastian, thank you for your support. Okay, let's get to it. Our first monster for this episode is the Merman. Now, there's nothing wrong with Merman. I do feel a little bit like Dungeons & Dragons has maybe more distinct species of aquatic humanoids than it really needs. I understand that the Kuotoa and the Sahuagin and whatever the other one is, the Lokotha, are all distinct in certain ways, but ultimately, unless you are running a campaign that's set primarily undersea, I don't know that you need so many different types of fishmen. And the Merman suffers a little bit from this, although I understand that the Triton is an elemental creature, and not the just kind of like aquatic human that the Merman is. They look the same, and I can never remember which one is which, and I don't know. I feel like I have some kind of unfair prejudice against aquatic monsters. That's weird, I play Call of Cthulhu, I love aquatic monsters. But that's not the strange thing about the Merman entry. If you think about all of the folklore throughout different human societies and, you know, folktales and fairy tales and legends and mythology, when you think of an aquatic humanoid, do you think of a Merman or do you think of a mermaid? And mermaids are mentioned, but only kind of in passing and only in the idea that they are passive people who just kind of hang out in villages and settlements tending to the children, which I think is not consistent with how, at least in some cultures, people have written about their encounters with mermaids. Now, I don't necessarily know that we want a whole monster whose deal is that they just really want to, like, marry sailors or beguile them into drowning. But still, the absence of mermaids in the Merman entry seems like a bit of an oversight. Other than that, the Merman entry is actually pretty detailed, and the bit where they use sort of like harpoons or grapples to slow down ships and then swarm aboard them, and attack them. I guess they don't go aboard necessarily since they don't have feet, but, you know, they attack them and plunder them. That's kind of cool. I can see that that would be a fun encounter. You're running around trying desperately to deal with all these mermen who are just dragging on long cables attached to your ship. It says that the mermen, will then attack the ship with crossbows, which I always find a little weird because, I mean, I don't know very much about crossbows. I'm not an expert, but I know that historically, one of the things that crossbowmen were very unhappy about was the idea of getting their crossbows wet, which it seems to me would be a real hazard if you lived under the surface of the ocean. So mermen are fine. They're definitely a world-building monster. I've yet to run into a game that really makes mermen interesting, but I'm open to the possibility. So if you have some good merman stories or merman bits from your campaign, let me know about them. I'm not saying that they can't be done interestingly. They do seem a little bland to me, just going off of this, and I would like to see more mermaids. Next up, we have the Mimic. Now, the Mimic entry is really interesting. Because the Mimic is one of the monsters that I should have mentioned in my recent episode about the Owlbear, in which I talked about D&D monsters that have become kind of cute mascots. People love to hate Mimics. You know, the idea of something that, in the classic form, and like in this illustration, appears like a treasure chest and then turns into an ambush. And the model of the Mimic that most commonly appears is this idea of a rambunctious treasure chest where the lid is actually a gaping toothy maw and it kind of bounces around getting ready to bite your hand off. Now that is not the Mimic as it appears here. The Mimic is a much more kind of dungeon ecology monster like we've seen with the Lurker above and the various oozes and the Shriekers and so on. We haven't got to Shriekers. Violet fungi is what I meant. That is to say that it's a sort of chameleonic shape-shifting ambush predator that what it does is it makes itself seem like, you know, a doorknob or a section of wall or, yes, a treasure chest. And then when you put your hand on it, it sticks to you and then it bops you in the snoot with its pseudopod. And then once you're dead, it eats you. But the really interesting thing about the Mimic, and one that doesn't come up in most sort of modern expressions of the mimic is, of course, that mimics are intelligent and can talk. Well, actually, that's not true. There are two kinds. There are the larger, more dangerous killer mimic, and then there are the slightly smaller, intelligent mimic. So you never quite know what you're going to get. So the idea of making friends with a mimic and, you know, giving it some food and sort of turning it into a pet and even using it as a spy, because mimics see everything and might tell you what they've seen in the dungeon, that could be really useful. The problem, I think, ultimately, is that the rampaging, bitey treasure chest image is just so much fun that it tends to crowd out the other possible interpretations of what a mimic is and can do. The other problem is that, lol, you thought it was a treasure chest, but it's actually a mimic, is the kind of thing that's funny once, but it's not really a good idea because either it's just a sort of mean-spirited prank, or it's intended to teach the players a lesson. And if it's intended to teach the players a lesson, then the lesson is probe every inch of everything carefully so that you don't find out that it was a mimic or that that length of dungeon ceiling was actually a lurker above or what have you. I know it says healing potion on the bottle, but it could actually be poison, lol, lol, lol. You don't want players to learn that lesson, because that lesson is going to see you die of old age at your gaming table covered in cobwebs. I don't know about you, but I've got stuff to be doing. I'd like to get on to the next bit. So ultimately, you have to kind of set up the mimic in a way that is naturalistic and show someone else who had died from a mimic attack prior to that or something like that. You have to play fair, because yes, it's playing fair to have the mimic just appear to be a treasure chest or what have you and bite up the players, but I hope you like listening to detailed descriptions of searches if that's what you do. But mimics are great, and I'm definitely going to use the fact that mimics are smart and can talk in an upcoming game. I genuinely never knew that. I mean, I have no excuse. Finally, we have the Mind Flayer, or the Illithid, although it is not referred to as an Illithid in this book, and I think that's a later addition, although one that does come from this kind of era of the game. Mind flayers are great, and mind flayers are a perfect example of the kind of weird goony science fiction monster that in principle fits so uneasily alongside the orcs and the pegasi and whatever, but actually works pretty well in D&D. I mean, I believe they're literally aliens. They're very alien-like. They have, you know, weird octopus heads, and they have psychic attacks rather than magic, and they literally suck your brain out. Now, I think that the description of the brain-sucking aspect is one of the weirdest in the whole Monster Manual, so it describes the process by which, in 1d4 melee rounds, if a mind flayer hits you, it uses its tentacles to suck your brain out, killing you, and then it eats your brain. And then it goes on to say, its more feared attack mode, however, is the mind blast. Whoa, 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 slow your roll, player. It's more feared attack mode? More feared than sucking your brain out? I mean, I guess the idea is that the mind flayer is not terribly physically prepossessing, so if it's sucking your friend's brain out, you can run up on it and fend it off of her with your half pikes and glaive vulges and what have you. I don't know, though. I mean, the mind blast is pretty good, I suppose. Anyway, the Mind Flayer is now an iconic D&D monster, and I don't have to tell you that they're good. And at this point, they're such a part of the game's brand that they have this mystique that goes with them, and I think people really like them. They like fighting them. One of the things that's weird about the Mind Flayer description is that the write-up of what it looks like goes into a lot of detail about its color. You notice that? There's a lot of color information in the Monster Manual entries. I wonder if it's just, like, to aid in description, or if it's for people who wanted to paint miniatures? I don't know. Anyway, the description makes a clear point that Mind Flayer eyes don't have pupils, and yet both illustrations of the Mind Flayer here have little itty-bitty pupils. So that's weird. It just seems like such a strange detail to include and then not have be in the illustration, you know what I mean? This is also one of the entries that has one of these goofy cartoons that shows a mind flayer mind blasting a whole bunch of guys, and I guess the point is to emphasize that the mind blast attack is in a cone, so if you really want to take out a mind flayer, you gotta sneak up on it and crack it over the noggin before it can mind blast you. And it's an okay cartoon, it's fine. The Mind Flayer art is not super prepossessing, but, you know, it does the job, and it definitely establishes the image of these weird alien guys in their kind of Doctor Who Time Lord robes. Is that the right comparison? Maybe they look like Doctor Strange. Anyway, they're fun, they're different, they're masterminds, they're aliens, so they view, you know, humans as a nuisance more than anything else. No, they're good. And they're definitely the kind of villains who get up to some schemes, you know, more in the line of a lich or a vampire than some orcs. So I definitely think Mind Flayers are a quality villain, even if I never really got on with the psionic rules. Okay, well that's about all the time that we have for today's episode. Join me next time as I talk about the Minotaur, the Mold, and the Morkoth on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.